In this second reading is from The Paradox of Becoming, starting on page 32, and it's continuing with the theme of nutriment. The four nutriments of consciousness are simply versions of karma, path, past, and present. When there is passion, delight, this is a quote now from Samyutta Nikaya 1264, quote, when there is passion, delight, and craving for the nutriment of physical food, consciousness lands there and increases. Where there is passion, delight, and craving for the nutriment of contact, consciousness lands there and increases. Where there is passion, delight, and craving for intellectual intention, consciousness lands there and increases. Where there is passion, delight, and craving for consciousness, consciousness lands there and increases. Physical food becomes available through karma, past and present. Contact is listed twice in the description of dependent co-arising, once as a subfactor under name and form, and once as the intermediate link between the six senses and feeling. In the latter location, contact obviously means sensory contact. In the former, its meaning is less obvious, but apparently means contact among the various mental events and physical properties that make up name and form. Although the standard description of dependent co-arising lists name and form as dependent on consciousness, in which case consciousness would serve as food for contact, other versions of dependent co-arising list name and form and consciousness side by side as mutually supporting. Thus, contact, in this context, apparently means contact among mental events and the physical properties. Because these events and properties are shaped by karma, contact is shaped by karma as well. Because karma is defined as intention, the nutriment of intellectual intention, which is one of the other nutriments, is simply mental karma in the present. Consciousness is listed as the fourth nutriment for consciousness because, as we have already seen, consciousness appears twice in the standard list of dependent co-arising, allowing for the first occurrence of consciousness to act as food for the second. Consciousness in the role of nutriment apparently corresponds to the consciousness aggregate, which would explain why many discourses discuss all five aggregates and not just the first four as grounds for becoming. Some passages in the canon actually depict all four forms of nutriment as grounds for becoming, thus supporting the interpretation that they are essentially karma with another name. This quote is from Samyutta Nikaya 1264. Where there is passion, delight, and craving for the nutriment of physical food, consciousness lands there and increases. Where consciousness lands and increases, there is the alighting of name and form. Where there is the alighting of name and form, there is the growth of fabrications. Where there is the growth of fabrications, there is the production of renewed becoming in the future. Where there is the production of renewed becoming in the future, there is future birth, aging, and death, together, I tell you, with sorrow, affliction, and despair. Similarly, for the nutriments of contact, intellectual intention, and consciousness. So, the introduction of karma as nutriment in the second field analogy adds nothing substantial to the first. What it does add is the emphasis on an important aspect of conditionality as a whole, which is that causal dependency is best seen as an act of feeding. The Buddha underscores this point with his most fundamental teaching on the topic in the novice's questions. He introduces the theme of conditionality in the very first question under the image of feeding. And this is from the fourth. The novice's questions, quote, what is the one? All beings subsist on nutriment. Unlike later schools of Buddhism, which illustrate causal dependence with the image of light reflecting from jewels and mirrors, suggesting an innocent, dazzling beauty, beautiful process, the Buddha uses the image of feeding to portray causal dependence in a much more disturbing way, so as to induce dispassion for it. So the next moment here is a lengthy sutta from Samyutta Nikaya 1263. I think the title that he doesn't have here, I think it's the sun. Quote, and how is physical food to be regarded? Suppose a couple, a husband and wife, taking meager provisions, were to travel through a desert, with them with their only baby son, dear and appealing. Then the meager provisions of the couple going through the desert would be used up and depleted, while there was still a stretch of desert yet to be crossed. The thought would occur to them, our meager provisions are used up and depleted, while there's still a stretch of the desert yet to be crossed. What if we were to kill this only baby son of ours, dear and appealing, and make dried meat and jerky? That way, chewing on the flesh of our son, at least the two of us would make it through this desert. Otherwise, all three of us would perish. So they would kill their only baby son, dear and appealing, and make dried meat and jerky. Chewing on the flesh of their son, they would make it through the desert. While eating the flesh of their only son, they would beat their breasts, crying, where have you gone, our baby son? Where have you gone, our only baby son? Now what do you think, bhikkhus? Would that couple eat that food playfully or for intoxication or for putting on bulk or for beautification? No, Lord. Wouldn't they eat that food simply for the sake of making it through the desert? Yes, Lord. In the same way I tell you is that nutriment of physical food is to be regarded. When physical food is comprehended, passion for the five strings of sensuality is comprehended. When passion for the five strings of sensuality is comprehended, there is no fetter bound by which a disciple of the noble ones would come back again to this world. And how is the nutriment of contact to be regarded? Suppose a flayed cow were to stand leaning against a wall. The creatures living in the wall would chew on it. If it were to stand leaning against a tree, the creatures living in the tree would chew on it. If it were to stand exposed to the water, the creatures living in the water would chew on it. If it were to stand exposed to the air, the creatures living in the air would chew on it. For wherever the flayed cow were to stand exposed, the creatures living there would chew on it. In the same way, I tell you, is the nutriment of contact to be regarded. When the nutriment of contact is comprehended, the three feelings, pleasure, pain, neither pleasure nor pain are comprehended. When the three feelings are comprehended, I tell you, there is nothing further for a disciple of the noble ones to do. And how is the nutriment of intellectual intention to be regarded? Suppose there were a pit of glowing embers deeper than a man's height, full of embers that were neither flaming nor smoking, and a man were to come along, loving life, hating death, loving pleasure, abhorring pain, and two strong men, having grabbed him by the arms, were to drag him to the pit of embers. To get far away would be the man's intention. Far away would be his wish. Far away would be his aspiration. Why is that? Because he would realize, if I fall into this pit of glowing embers, I will meet with death from that cause, or with death-like pain. So the same way, I tell you, is the nutriment of intellectual intention to be regarded. When the nutriment of intellectual intention is comprehended, the three forms of craving for sensuality, for becoming, and for non-becoming are comprehended. When the three forms of craving are comprehended, I tell you there is nothing further for a disciple of the noble ones to do. And how is the nutriment of consciousness to be regarded? Suppose that having arrested a thief, a criminal, they were to show him to the king, quote, this is a thief and a criminal for you, your majesty. Impose on him whatever punishment you like. So the king would say, go, men, and stab him in the morning with 100 spears. So they would stab him in the morning with 100 spears. Then the king would say at noon, men, how is that man? Still alive, your majesty. So the king would say, go, men, and stab him at noon with 100 spears. So they would stab him at noon with 100 spears. Then the king would say in the evening, men, how is that man? Still alive, your majesty. So the king would say, go, men, and stab him in the evening with 100 spears. So they would stab him in the evening with 100 spears. Now what do you think, bhikkhus? Would that man, being stabbed with 300 spears a day, experience pain and distress from that cause? Even if he were stabbed with only 1 spear, Lord, he would experience pain and distress from that cause, to say nothing of 300 spears. In the same way, I tell you, monks, is the nutriment of consciousness to be regarded. When the nutriment of consciousness is comprehended, name and form are comprehended. When name and form are comprehended, I tell you, there is nothing further for a disciple of the noble ones to do. Samyutta Nikaya 1263. Thus, the inherent stress of becoming lies not only in the instability of the factors in which it depends, but also in the stress and pain involved in those factors. Pain felt not only for the person creating those states of becoming, but also by any being providing nourishment for the person's physical existence. Viewed in this way, the two-field analogies show why becoming offers no lasting happiness and why the happiness is rarely blameless. This means that becoming, when looked at objectively, is not a desirable process in which to be engaged. Because these analogies also suggest why renewed becoming is potentially an infinitely renewable process, they show why anyone looking for true happiness would want to search for a way to bring becoming to an end.
Any questions, comments?
There is, I may be